you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. Tonight, Phil is actually on vacation, so I'm filling in as host. I'm Camille. I'm usually here as the co-host, but I actually have a special co-host tonight and a special guest. So I brought on Sean Fredrickson because he lives in San Diego and he is very familiar with the mess that has been going on down there for quite some time. He is very involved in political stuff down there. He is a freedom fighter. He's a parental rights fighter. I absolutely love Sean. I adore him. I've known him for a bit now. Sean, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Man, I am so blessed. Thank you for bringing me on, Camille. What a joy. What an awesome opportunity to hang out with Amy, ask questions about such a relevant race.
No, I'm excited, which brings us to Amy. So Amy here is running in this special election for county supervisor. And that has been quite a thing because she ran last year. And Nathan Fletcher was unfortunately reelected. But he was his own demise and he has had a lot of drama, which we'll get to. We've discussed it on the show many times. Anyway, he ended up finally, I guess, quitting. He was kind of forced into
imploding is the word that I've used often.
He imploded on himself and he is no more in San Diego politics at this time. And so there is now a special election happening and Amy is still running. She was right there and ready to go again. And she's like, here I am. It is my time. And so I'm so excited to have you here, Amy, and hear all about your campaign and just what's been going on. And so Sean and I are just going to, we're just going to ask questions and figure out what's going on. So Amy, first, can you tell us just about you?
I'm a lifelong San Diegan and grew up in Tierra Santa. I was raised Jewish. I had a bat mitzvah, went to Hebrew school, the whole nine yards. My dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was very young. I share these details because it's really important part of my story. And I went on to become one of the first people in my family to get a college degree. And I earned my political science degree from San Diego State University. Later in life, when I was 30 years old, I was 8 months pregnant and my dad died of complications from multiple sclerosis. And then 5 weeks later, after a normal, uncomplicated pregnancy, my daughter Ashley was born in a coma. And again, I share these because right now the pressing issues in the county right now are mental health and addiction. And I've been really open about my journey. I went into church ministry and I led Celebrate Recovery. And I've led hundreds, if not thousands of people into treatment and recovery. Now, fast forward to, 2020. And that's when I met Sean Fredrickson and the Freedom Fighters in San Diego. And we stood up for the safe reopening of schools, the safe reopening of churches, the safe reopening of businesses, and we fought against mandates right here in San Diego County. And I'm so glad that we won. Last year, I ran against Nathan Fletcher because he was the lockdown king in San Diego County. And he was reelected and then he spectacularly publicly imploded over charges of sexual assault. So now we find ourselves in a special election and there was a runoff where I made the top two. I ran against about $1 million in PAC money to my zero in PAC money. And now the race is on to November 7th. Really, we're at a crossroads at San Diego County. Which way are we going to go? Are we going to go to socialism or are we going to go to common sense? So that's why I'm running.
So that's like 3 weeks away.
That 21 days, but who's counting?
So yeah, who's counting? Yes. Okay. And so I had a question on the tip of my toe. Oh, Nathan Fletcher, is it true? He told people they couldn't walk on the beach or they couldn't stop. Like they just had to keep walking. Am I correct on that?
Yes, like for
Sean
sure.
Can talk about that.
That absolutely happened in the county of San Diego. And they put the sheriff's department in a really strange predicament because they found that their resources were so limited that they're policing the beaches. I remember I spoke with one of the higher ups in the sheriff's department trying to figure out, hey, is this actually what's going to happen if we're just sitting on the beach, having like dinner with my wife and in my car? And he's like, well, honestly, we don't care, but the county's trying to implement this stuff. So yeah, Nathan Fletcher was absolutely behind it. He was the mask Nazi trying to virtue signal during all the Board of Supervisors meetings. You know, if you know, there's been conversation, Amy, about the possibility of mask mandates coming back. You know, out of curiosity, mm-hmm. what would be your position if something like that were to come back? Like you've got a fairly split board. Where would you stand?
So just last night, I was at a community forum, and my opponent, she said that she would bring back masks if she were county supervisor. Well, here's the thing. We don't want to get banned on YouTube about talking about this, but we know that the science is clear about these things. And I do not believe that masking two-year-olds is humane. Or compassionate or sane, or in any way common sense. So when I answered last night about what I would do and my response to, because here's the thing, there's just a lot of people that want to know, well, if COVID comes back, what are you going to do? Well, I absolutely would never lock down the county again, that's for sure.
Did COVID ever leave?
Good question.
You know, I know some people who are sick right now, and one on a group text today, one of them was like, oh, did you test for COVID? I'm like, really? We still doing that? I don't want to get kicked off YouTube, but I just think COVID is, last week I had like a 2-day flu. I didn't test for anything. I'm like, I have a flu, you know, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to drink my water and I'm going to get up tomorrow and be okay. That's what happened. And anyway, sorry, that's a little off topic, but
well, it's true.
I mean, here's the thing. It's like,
well, what if the
yeah, run around
shaking your heads?
What get called? I've been called a COVID denier. I'm anti-science, science denier by my opponent, and also I was called that by Nathan Fletcher. So the thing is, why this is so relevant right now is we just need to move past COVID, and we need to move on to the pressing issues that are in San Diego County right now. In fact, we need to be laser focused on it right now. 400,000 county residents are severely rent burdened, which is just a fancy government term for the rent is too damn high. And we have a growing humanitarian homeless crisis too. All of these things are just getting worse from the people that have been running this county for the past few years, and they're failing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Sean, and I are on a group text. And we often are discussing the homeless. It sounds like there's literally like busfuls of homeless people, immigrants, just being dropped off in San Diego right now. And I know, Amy, I've seen you and following you on Instagram. You know, I've seen you discussing that as well. Can we talk about that for a moment? Can you guys tell me more?
Yeah, I can speak to that issue. I've been really vocal about it. So in the past month alone, we've had nearly 20,000 migrants that have been dropped off in San Diego County. And last week at the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, they voted to allocate $3 million for migrants. Now, I'm sure that they felt that they had to do this, but they didn't have to do this. And here's why. It's the government's job. It's the federal government's job. It's their jurisdiction to protect the border. It's the federal government's job, which has a $7 trillion budget to take care of this. And the money that has been allocated by the county is not just free money. It was actually ARPA funds. Yes, COVID funds. And it's literally taking from residents in San Diego County money that would have gone to homelessness, affordable housing, and even low interest loans to qualified buyers who have lower incomes to be able to purchase their own property.
So that money, like going to the migrants, how is it? Is it supposed to house them? Is it supposed to feed them? What is that money supposed to do?
So the federal government turned over massive amounts of money to NGOs, non-government organizations, who then in turn were giving bus tickets or airfare to people who were newly arrived, claiming asylum so that they could get to their sponsors in other parts of the country. That money dried up about a month ago. And then the Border Patrol had no choice but to street release people into San Diego County at different transit. transit centers. So we live in a county where there's less than a 2% vacancy rate for apartments and a homeless crisis that's out of control. So that, of course, was just making everything worse.
Well, we've seen
Sean, did you want to say something?
Yeah, the county continues to throw money at these issues, like homelessness, which you're touching on, and it seems that the problems are continually getting worse. What are other solutions that could be implemented by the Board of Supervisors?
So you're absolutely right. They just keep throwing money at the problem as if that is a solution. And what we're seeing is homelessness is only growing worse. So my platform is shelter first with treatment. We need more shelters. Period, end of story. We don't have enough shelters. And there are people that are part of the homeless population that are service resistant. And even if there was a shelter, they wouldn't go there. And what's happening is there's significant public safety issues that are happening in different communities all throughout the county. People don't feel safe in their own parks, their own neighborhood parks. They don't feel safe walking their kids to school around needles that are on the sidewalk. And even businesses, especially downtown, they just keep their doors locked.
I've been looking at local city like policies where, for example, Encinitas, 20 years ago, they had very little homeless, but it seems that the city's being incentivized to bring in homeless people. Like they have a high enough per capita, then they get more access to funds. And so why is this pay to, or like homeless encampment becoming something to welcome in? Rather than trying to alleviate, it seems like they're trying to create homeless encampments. Have you seen that?
You're absolutely right, Sean. I call it the homeless industrial complex. There is big money in the homelessness crisis. So California has something called Housing First, and Housing First has spent nearly $25 billion on Housing First. And what we're only seeing is that homelessness is getting worse. So my plan is shelter first with treatment. I believe that if you truly love somebody, you hold them accountable, that there's accountability in love. And when somebody is struggling with severe addiction, severe mental illness, and they are committing crimes, the best possible place for them is not jail. Right? Where our sheriff's department is understaffed and we're seeing record overdoses and people taking their own lives. No, we need mandatory treatment. Shelter first with treatment.
That's good.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
you bring up law enforcement. One of the questions that I've run into with a lot of San Diego Police Department, as well as the sheriff's department, is that they don't feel protected by the legislative, where if they were to enforce and stand for what the laws are, what they state, that they would be criminalized by these left-leaning organizations. What would you do to help them out, to make them feel protected by doing their job?
This past week, I got a major endorsement. The San Diego Police Officers Association endorsed me. And they endorsed me over my opponent, who is actually a sitting San Diego City Councilwoman. And here's why. My opponent supports something called the Protect Act. Except that it doesn't protect the public. It protects criminals. Now that seems like an extreme statement to say, but I can back it up. If you look at the Protect Act, what it does is it changes the definition of how a police officer can pull somebody over from reasonable suspicion to probable cause. And so if a police officer sees somebody outside of a bank and it's noon and it's 100 degrees and they're wearing a ski mask, well, reasonable suspicion means, oh my gosh, I think that guy's going to go into that bank and rob it. But by changing the definition of when you can actually, law enforcement can engage to probable cause, there's a completely different standard. And so it has to do with traffic stops. And there's even language in there that won't allow police to ask somebody if they've pulled them over for maybe a light being out. A tail light being out to further question them if they are under the influence. They cannot. And the last thing, too, exactly what you were saying, Sean, is officers not feeling protected. Part of the Protect Act would take away qualified immunity from law enforcement, which means if something happens on the job, that they could be personally sued. So what law enforcement officer is going to sign up for that?
Right.
There you go. That's a good point.
Right. That they're going to have to, like, doctors are going to take out malpractice insurance, and then they're going to go broke. Right. You know, I mean, it's not funny, but, like, that's going to be so costly and eat at their salary that it's like, yeah, totally. You're right. Who's going to want to put their life on the line daily at the possibility of losing everything over an accusation? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's pretty horrific. And I just think police officers need to be able to do their jobs. And if they pull someone over for X, Y, and Z, and something else is going on, we need them to be protecting the public. We need them to be, you know, and even like you said, a lot of these can go back to mental health issues, not necessarily jail, but like the police officer has an opportunity to possibly help that person with something that's going on. And I know we hear the defund the police and get the, you know, therapist in there, but no, you know, like the police is the first person. They're the, you know, they're the first defense. And we need to support them. We need to be backing them up. We need to be giving them more resources, not less.
Yeah, it'd be great to incentivize policing.
Absolutely, yeah, that's why they endorsed me.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Sean, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just thinking about how we're running into a predicament with the Republican and Democrat Party don't seem too different these days. You know, what can you do as a candidate to really stand up for the people? You know, what does it look like to have a candidate that values liberty and righteousness and morality?
Absolutely, yes. Let's call it what it is, the Uniparty.
There you go.
And I have to say, it's been so fascinating as I have run for office and I talk to Democrats and I talk to Republicans. And I am endorsed by the San Diego Republican Party, but I'm also endorsed by the San Diego Libertarian Party. And my core value is the Constitution of the United States and freedom. I'm a let and let live person. You do your life, but don't tell me how to live my life, and do not tell me how to raise my own kids. These are core values of mine. And then I guess what makes me a Republican is just being fiscally conservative. My opponent oversees, she constantly brags how she oversees this, you know, multi-billion dollar budget for the city of San Diego without mentioning that it's also $350 million in debt, the city of San Diego. Wow. And so what can we really do? I think we are so beyond red or blue in this country. I think we've got such major issues. It doesn't matter who I'm talking to. I've been with my opponent in 15 different community forums, and I constantly will ask this question to the audience. Do you believe that San Diego is better off now than it was 5 years ago? Nobody raises their hand. So I think that's something that we can all unify about and put the community first.
In what ways would you say that San Diego has suffered from 5 years to now?
Oh my gosh, just name any key metric from homelessness to public safety, and I can quote those stats, to cost of living. I mean, every single metric that government is supposed to help with is just worse. And of course, the lockdowns made everything worse too. And now, as we're seeing with the migrant crisis, the money that was set aside to help San Diegans after the pandemic is not even going to be available to San Diegans anymore. We are at a crossroads. We are at a crisis. And this is going to be a history-making election.
You know, one of the crazy things... Oh, God. Sorry, go ahead.
A better question, but I was going to say, how do you hold the federal government accountable to the border? Because the border issue is definitely an issue, especially with fentanyl in like all of California, but you guys are there. I mean, you are right there. They're literally in your streets. And so how do you, as county board supervisor, get to hold the federal government accountable?
You know, I just kind of go back to our freedom fighting days with Sean. And standing up and bringing the community together and the people's voice being heard, we were able to stop a lot of nonsense from happening in San Diego County because of that. San Diego County, yeah, we had it pretty bad. And I'm being careful because of YouTube. But here's the thing, because we all stood up and took a stance, we were able to protect San Diego County. So here's the thing. What about standing up to the federal government? That's just a completely different animal, if you will. Well, I filed a federal lawsuit with Reopen San Diego, and we sued the city of San Diego, and we won. We really did like a David versus Goliath battle. So I am not new to standing up to the federal government or to standing up to government at all. So that's exactly what people could count on from me.
That's awesome.
All right. So you make mention.
It was awesome to watch. I'm going to let you go, Sean, but yeah, it was like literally just watching you guys. I was like, good for you, San Diego. Anyway, sorry, Sean, go ahead.
I don't know. Maybe it's lag. I don't know if like I'm supposed to jump in. I don't know how laggy it is. But okay, one of the thoughts.
Please jump in.
Okay. One of the thoughts that you brought up, standing against government. So there was a time where we had, I want to say 1,000 people show up to the Board of Supervisors, where we got there at 9 a.m. And I can't remember the specific item that we were discussing, but we went from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. That evening, where we were protesting and requesting the government to recognize that we, the citizens, did not agree with what they were attempting to pass, whether it was the abortion, making abortion San Diego an abortion safe place, safe haven, or whatever it was, or maybe it was the ghost guns bill, or maybe it was prolonging the mandates in the county. But regardless, how do we, the people, get heard? Because after 12 hours of us speaking, they didn't listen to us. And by they, it was unanimous, where all five of the Board of Supervisors voted in opposition to what the 1,000 people before them requested. How do we know that you won't do the same thing?
I think what it all starts with is I have been all over District 4. And it turned out that our freedom groups that stood up to the government overreach, it turns out we weren't the only ones who have not been happy with how the government hasn't been listening. I have been all over District 4 to different community planning groups, and the sentiment is the same. And I don't want to say we're quite at a tipping point in San Diego County, but I feel like we're almost there. And so what I have tried to show through example is that I will be a servant leader, that I will be and I will continue to be a heart-centered candidate. What I'm hearing from people is that my opponent doesn't even look people in the eye, that she doesn't return emails or phone calls. And I have demonstrated, just as many other people who have led through the past few years, is that I am in the community. I am not afraid to stand up. I'm not afraid of all the name-calling that I've been called. I'm the one that returns the emails. I return those phone calls, and I'm showing up, and I'm hearing people, and I'm listening to people. And so that's the way that I can really show people that how I campaign and how I have led through the past couple of years is how I'll govern. Now, have I made mistakes along the way? Yes, of course. Nobody's perfect, but I am heart-centered, and that's the way that I want to lead. I want to put the people back at the top of the org chart where they belong. If you look at the county org chart, it's supposed to be at the people at the top, then the Board of Supervisors. When I talk to people all over District 4, no one believes that the people are at the top. They believe that the Board of Supervisors are at the top. And we need to change it back for the people.
Yeah, Nathan Fletcher set a pretty terrible precedent. Keep going.
Yeah, well, I was going to say about a lot of people prior to 2020 had no idea that they even had a county board of supervisors or what their county board of supervisors did. I think San Diego was the wake up call for the state where they were like, wait a second. And Nathan Fletcher really, because he was so hardcore about all his rules and restrictions, people were like, hold on. Who are these people and who gave them the authority to do all these things? And it was suddenly I guess it was like, you know, a good thing. As tragic as the situation as it was like, it really opened people's eyes up to be like, hold on. Like Sean said, thousand people showed up to that meeting. Like people were actually showing up to board supervisors meetings for the first time and saying, we have a say, we are the people, listen to us. And can we touch on, for just for those who are kind of new and still don't know exactly what's going on, Nathan Fletcher? I mean, I feel like he was, I know there's others in there, but I feel like he was the most hardcore of the supervisors who was just like my way or the highway. And then, of course, he was his own demise in the end.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys mind?
Go for it, Sean.
Let me jump in. Away. So Nathan Fletcher was groomed to be an incredible politician. He had a career in the military, in intelligence. He was a master of understanding the way people think and manipulating people off of their off of his comprehension through his military training. And the way that he ran the Board of Supervisors was very unique, because there was, if you remember back just 15, 20 years ago, the San Diego County Board of Supervisors was like a 5-0 Republican board, where there were in all five districts around the county, it was five conservatives. Up until the time that Nathan Fletcher was elected, I'm pretty certain he was the first Democrat in a while to be elected, especially in District 4. The candidate that was in that district before Nathan Fletcher termed out, and his last term, nobody ran against him. He was such a strong candidate and a Republican in District 4. And the time that Nathan Fletcher came in that role, he immediately started planting seeds of division. He knew that if you can divide it, you can conquer it. And so that County Board of Supervisors office was, I would say, fairly tranquil in the sense of people work together. Everybody had their own ideas, and all the Board of Supervisors in their districts are all trying to build something up. But Nathan Fletcher came in there with a strategy where he would divide people, pit people against each other, make himself the leader, and start to implement people behind him, which is what he did with Tara Lawson Reamer and then Nora Vargas. And if it wasn't for his selfish, ignorant choices to abuse a woman, we would still be dealing with such a tyrant. But it's amazing what the Lord will do to the selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was too detailed.
I don't want to sit here and talk bad about the whole board. But Amy, should you be elected, you're going to have to work with Nora.
Yep.
She's a strong personality. And I feel like you're a very strong personality. How will you work with a divided board? I know if you win, then it's going to be a majority, right? Like you are the tiebreaker, your Correct. Campaign, right? The special election is the tiebreaker. So I know you would have the majority should you win, but should you win, how do you do that? How do you work with someone who is so opposite of what you believe?
Right. So, you know, kind of going back to talking about like the uniparty and everything, and this is something that I've said publicly, I actually vow to be nonpartisan.
Which
this is a nonpartisan race.
You're supposed to be, but yeah.
Yeah. You're not right. Even on the ballot, there's no R next to your name. There's no D next to your name. You're just supposed to put the people first, period, end of story, right? But that's not how it's been at all. What I have seen is that special interests are completely the ones that have the ears of the supervisors. In my race, and I referenced this earlier, there was $1 million in PAC money spent before the primary. $600,000 of it was spent for my now opponent that I'm facing in the general. And then the third place finisher, she got $400,000 in PAC money. These are people who head up these PACs, who literally think they are the puppet masters.
What are the PACs that are supporting them?
The PACs that support my now opponent that I'm facing in the general, the labor unions. SEIU, AFL-CIO.
Wait, hold on. That's Nathan Fletcher's wife. Nathan Fletcher's wife runs the California Labor Party. And she got, if I'm correct, did she step down from the assembly because she was doing some dirty deeds with the labor union, and then she immediately got appointed as the head of the labor union? Is that correct?
I don't know about dirty deeds, but... But yes,
allegations.
My opponent in the general is actually endorsed by Lorena Gonzalez.
There you go. So that makes complete sense.
That, yeah.
So how would I lead? I'm going to put the people first. That's it. And here's the thing. Like,
I'm sorry. I thought that was against like the rules of PACs, the state. Okay. I'm going to have to like go look that one up later.
So what political action committees can do is they can raise unlimited amounts of money and they can do what's called an independent expenditure. So as long as the candidate isn't telling them how to spend the money, they can spend money on texting. They can spend money on mailers. They can spend money on social media ads, YouTube ads, television ads. So here's my big homework assignment for anybody. So you're only going to get a ballot if you're in District 4 for this race. But next year is a big election year. Whenever you get a mailer in the mail, make sure you flip it over, look at the fine print on the back, and then you're going to find out who paid for that mailer. And it's very eye-opening. You know, and I just want to kind of like state what's going on in my race. This, again, it is a David versus Goliath race. It was a David versus Goliath race when I ran against the incumbent, Nathan Fletcher. My district is 49% Democrat and it's 19% Republican. So basically, I didn't have any other Republicans that I had to run against that ran serious campaigns, because they look at a district like this, it's called a D plus 30 race, and they just go, wow, that's impossible. But here's the thing, we cannot allow our county to go the same way that the city of San Diego has gone. And my opponent has been a city councilwoman for the city of San Diego. And everybody else around the county who doesn't live in the city of San Diego is going, oh my gosh, we don't want what's going on in the city of San Diego to spread throughout the county. That's what's at stake right now. So that's why I'm running. I'm running because it's important for the future of my kids and eventually my future grandkids. Because we're going in the wrong direction and we need to change direction.
Yeah, I agree. Sandiag.
Yes.
Perfect. The County Board of Supervisors has a lot to do with Sandiag, correct?
Yes.
I should know this. We've done episodes on this in soy research, but like I feel like that was already a million years ago. So SANDAG stands for the San Diego, the transportation. And now I should have had this at the ready.
SANDAG is basically, it's 18 local cities who each send a representative. So it's San Diego, it's government basically for all of San Diego. And they collect taxes through something called Transnet, which is a sales tax that was voted on by the voters. And it was supposed to go to our roads, to widen our freeways, to maintain our freeways, for infrastructure improvements. But instead, now 2/3 of our Transnet money now go to bike lanes and public transportation. Okay. Public transportation that only 4% of the population even takes.
Right. And like those out in East County, like it's not, it wouldn't have any benefit to them whatsoever. Like those who are, you know, out in the middle of, it seems like nowhere, it's still San Diego County, wouldn't benefit them whatsoever. And they're proposing a per mileage tax. Like I know that's a big thing that kind of they keep delaying, but that's a big thing. Because as we're pushing electric vehicles and people are starting to switch to electric and they're not, then the, you know, less people are buying gas, right? So they're trying to, all cars are supposed to, they want to pass this per mile tax. And no one even knows how they're going to, like, what they want to put personal meters in your cars, which is such a violation of your privacy. No one even knows how they're going to implement this, but they are trying to do this. And I'm sure that would be a cost to you guys too in San Diego. Like, oh, well, every car now has to have this installed. And so that's another $1,000 if you want to buy a car or, you know, the cost, I'm sure. Anyway, speak to that for a bit, because I know that's been a big thing.
Sandag actually voted to take it out of the transportation, the regional transportation plan. However, here's why. It's because California, yes, the state of California is looking at doing a mileage tax statewide.
Yes.
So buckle up, everybody else outside of San Diego County. It was taken out of our regional transportation plan, but it's because the state is thinking about doing one. Now, here's the thing. This whole idea of a mileage tax, the whole thing was, oh, well, you know, people who have electric cars need to pay too. But the mileage tax was also going to impact people with gas-powered vehicles too. And none of this money, none of it was going to go towards maintaining or improving our roads. It was going to go to a $167 billion public transportation plan, right? So just think of the train to nowhere in yes. California, and then apply that's it right. to San Diego, because that's what they were trying to find. So that's they're right. still looking at other ways to try to fund this thing. And what they want to do instead is take 853 miles of our fast lanes that already exist on our freeways and turn them into toll roads.
And you're going to pay for fast lanes.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The very same people who say that they want equity, let me tell you, it's only the rich people that are going to be able to afford these lanes. So yeah, to me, this is the greatest argument against this plan.
Which is another reason why we need you in there to have a voice of reason, so that we're not, you know, and for anyone who's watching and saying, oh, well, they already took this out, so why are we talking about this? Because it kind of shows you what absurd ideas these people are coming with up with to waste your money. They are not fiscally responsible. As she's already pointed out, the city council member has driven the city $350 million, or the county $350 million in debt. And then they just took a few million dollars that was allocated for something and sent it somewhere else. And so this is why it's so important, is because they're the ones coming up with these not so genius ideas to spend your money and tax you more. And
absolutely.
We have got to stop that. We have absolutely got to stop that.
Yeah. It seems like they're really doing it. These government officials are really finding a great way to fund these unions, because if they did the high-speed rail through San Diego County, who's going to be building that? The unions. And the unions are 100%. The ones that are backing all these candidates, Nathan Fletcher, Lorena Gonzalez, as well as Nora Vargas and Tara Lawson Reamer. And they don't care about the people. This is what I found, is residents that are in Tara Lawson Reamer's district who don't donate large swaths of cash to her campaign, they don't get a phone call back from her office. Like, how terrible would it be to have a candidate, or that to have a representative that when you call because you have an issue in your district, they don't care to call you back? That is not a representative. That is a bureaucrat. No. And we need more representatives that will listen to the requests of the people in your district, because that's what a supervisor's for. Could you help us understand, who are the cities that are in your district that will receive a ballot? And then how soon should they be submitting their ballot?
Absolutely. So District 4 is 101 square miles, and it has 675,000 residents in it. And the cities that it makes up are parts of San Diego, all of La Mesa, and all of Lemon Grove. And then there's also the unincorporated parts of the county. The communities that make up District 4 are everything from Bankers Hill to Mission Valley to Hillcrest to Claremont, Bay Park, Bay Ho, Linda Vista, Claremont Mesa, La Mesa, I mentioned that before, Rancho San Diego, which has been a great source of support for me, Paradise Hills, Southeastern San Diego, Rolando Encanto, San Diego State area, and the list goes on and on. It's actually, here's the thing, like, I have fallen in love with San Diego all over again. I've been able to go into these communities. I mean, let's face it. We all have our normal, just where we go every day. And every time I walk into these communities and I meet people in these communities and I hear their concerns, and their concerns are the same as other people, but they're not being heard. And so we have to change this. It's just, this election is so important. And to your point, Here's the thing. There's people that will never feel comfortable mailing in their ballot. They'll have an opportunity to vote in person at a vote center. Or if they want to vote in person now and get it over with, they can go to the registrar of voters in Kearny Mesa, vote tomorrow if they want to. It opens up at 8 a.m. But you can drop off your ballot. But here's the thing, what I really encourage people to do. If you do vote early, it really does help the candidates, because what happens is it helps us. That way we don't have to knock on your door. We know that you've already voted. We don't have to send you a text, which costs money. We can focus really on getting out the vote and the people that haven't voted.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great.
What else is going on down there in San Diego?
I went in the primary election. I went down to the Registrar of Voters and I observed. I think there's a lot of conservatives that are out there really concerned about ballot tabulation and the process of which these ballots are counted. And I know that there's not a whole lot of control that the Board of Supervisors has over that process, because that's more of a state thing. But I do want to encourage voters that the system that's in place does seem to have a pretty strong level of security, transparency. And if you would like to go down there as a voter and observe the tabulation and observe the voting process, I highly recommend you get your eyes on there. And you can actually go into the signature verification rooms and watch people verify the signatures and how they go about doing it. Because the more education we have as voters, the more confident we'll be when we're casting that ballot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that, because that's I know that's definitely, like you said, a concern of conservatives about, you know, stolen ballots, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's very encouraging.
Yeah. Okay. So one question that I have about an endorsement that you just received. So when I saw this, I was kind of like, holy smokes, what is going on? Bill Walton, the former Hall of Famer. Is that right? Is that what I saw? Bill Walton is endorsing you. Can you tell us a little bit of story about that?
No, Bill Walton, he's just an NBA legend, and he's been in San Diego for the past 35 years. And last year, he started speaking out against Mayor Todd Gloria. Now, keep in mind that Bill Walton is a registered Democrat, and what really set him off was how in his own community, he lives in the Balboa Park area. He said that oftentimes when he's riding his bicycle, he's attacked by people who are homeless. And so this has been his single issue, and he has spoken out. So I reached out to him and I asked for his endorsement. And he gave it to me. And I think that's just really like a really clear example of how people are kind of done with like the whole, not everybody, but a lot of people are like, you know what? They're done with how City Hall and county government are running things in San Diego County. They're ready to vote for the person over the party. And oftentimes it's like a single issue. So it's been actually really great going out into different communities. And again, I'm the endorsed Republican candidate, endorsed by the Libertarian Party as well. But I had people coming up to me last night after the forum. They're like, Amy, I'm a Democrat, but I'm voting for you. So yeah, the Bill Walton thing was really cool. Thanks for mentioning that, Sean.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Congratulations on that.
That's huge.
Also, that speaks to you running as, like you said, you're running for the people. You're not running to be like, we all need to be Republican and everyone, you know, red. I know you're, you know, I've spoken to you personally and I know a lot of your beliefs, but you're like, look, we're here for the people. And what do the people want? And obviously, that's a perfect example of he's not concerned with who you're voting for president, or, you know, what religion you are behind the curtain. He's just like, Amy has solutions. We have problems. She has solutions. I am going to endorse her because I believe in her solutions to our problems. And so that really speaks to you and who you are as a candidate and what you're doing, you know, what you believe in. And so I just want to applaud you for that, because that does tell you, like, you're just here for the people. You don't care what party they vote for. You're like, I'm here for you. We got to fix these things. Let's do it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned early on was the 400,000 rent burdened citizens that are in San Diego County. Is there anything that the county can actually do to help this? Or is this just like a allow the system to fix itself kind of problem?
I don't really think that government is the answer. Government is often the problem, and we need to get government out of the way. I mean, that's why we've stood up in the past few years, because of government overreach. So when you start looking at, well, why are things so bad in San Diego County for housing? And it's really bad, actually, all over. But San Diego, what we're seeing is, just 2 weeks ago, the San Diego City Council voted to increase water rates by 20% over the next 2 years. Okay, that's a San Diego City Council that's 9 Democrats and 0 Republicans. They have to know that by increasing water rates, that's also going to increase rent, because typically in many situations, it's landlords that pay for water. And so you see things like that. And then you also see things like, well, everybody opened up their SDG&E bill in January and went, you know, I know I did. And so what we really need is somebody to stand up to the California Public Utilities Commission, to stand up to Sacramento and ask these questions. Why are we being charged the highest utility rates in the nation? In San Diego. And so I think there is actually something that a representative of the people can accomplish. I am not for rent subsidies. Again, I mentioned 400,000 people are severely rent burdened in this county. I don't believe that the answer is socialism. I don't, and I just see that as something that's going to get us more into debt and not solve the problem. Now, here's the thing. I am pro small business, but I am anti-corporatist. So I'll stand up to the Black Rocks, the Blackstones, the Vanguards of the world who are trying to come into San Diego and buy properties and demolish single family homes so that they can build these huge apartment complexes. And it is the Wall Street takeover of what was private property, which that will be a disaster. And I can talk more about that, but you can absolutely count on me to stand up against that, the corporate takeover of San Diego County.
That's the exact position we need a candidate to take. Honestly, as someone who cares about our region enough, that's not a left or right policy. That's merely an understanding of what it means to be a resident in a county and protecting our neighborhoods from these globalists. And I want to hear what you would have to say to that Democrat that's thinking, I don't know if I've ever voted for a Republican. Why would they want to vote for you? If you were their first Republican to vote for, even though it's a nonpartisan race, we know that you're endorsed by the Republican Party, what would convince them to make that decision to leave a candidate who's supporting socialism and more debt and more homelessness to choose you?
So it has been over these single issues. So specifically, how I've been able to make contact with Democrats in District 4 is they are really upset about SB 10. That was a Senate bill that was passed. It allows cities to opt in to it. And what SB 10 would allow was exactly what I was talking about earlier. Your next door neighbor can sell their house to XYZ Corporation. That corporation comes in, bulldozes the house right next to you, puts up 10 units with no setbacks, which meaning you'll have an apartment wall right next to your house with no parking. There's no affordable housing cutouts, and all of those units will go at market rate. Now, so instead of you having a next door neighbor, now Wall Street is your next door neighbor. And so when I am speaking with Democrats and their single issue, and they're saying, Amy, because you're with us on this and you took an early stance, I stood up to the developers. I went into these developer meetings, you know, for the endorsement process, and I looked him in the eye and I said, I will put the community first. And I'll never forget, I was being walked out of the meeting, you know, by one of the leaders of the developers. And she said, well, that was really refreshing. And I could tell, though, she didn't really mean it. And I go, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you told the truth. Right. And so, no, I didn't get their endorsement and I didn't get their money. So those are the kind of things that I'm winning Democrats over. SB 10, protection of neighborhoods, protecting our neighborhoods from Wall Street takeovers. Also, the other issue that's a single issue is like Bill Walton, homelessness. I mean, the fact is my opponent voted against the unsafe camping ordinance. It was controversial, but it did pass the city of San Diego. And what it did was it put up perfectly fine boundaries that said, no, you can't camp in front of somebody's business. You can't camp in a park or block a sidewalk. And so it did set aside certain areas of the city where people could never camp. But it still allowed other areas open for camping, and police cannot force them to go to a shelter when shelter beds are not available. I am someone who deeply believes that it is not compassionate to allow people to sleep and die on our streets. And so when it comes to encampments, I don't believe that somebody has a right to set up camp in front of an elementary school or in front of a business. So my opponent, though, apparently believes that people do have a right to do that.
Interesting. And I actually want to go back to what you said about Bill with the, you know, he wants to ride his bike and he's getting attacked by homeless people. And that's actually an interesting thing because we touched on Sandag a bit, and they're allocating a lot of money that was supposed to be for the roads. They're, you know, sending it to build to make bike lanes. But then the bike lanes, they're not even doing anything about the homeless issue. And suddenly no one's going to use the bike lanes because they're going to be unsafe and blocked by tents and, you know, bicycles and cars of the homeless taking over those areas, and they're allowing it. And yet they put the money into these bike lanes in the first place. Sorry, I just wanted to throw this.
It does not make sense. So when was the last time both of you have ridden like in like actual city of San Diego proper roads? Have you done so recently? You're basically it's pothole city. Is what it is. So it just doesn't make sense to spend all this money on bike lanes when it's literally ridden with our roads are ridden with potholes, and it's dangerous for bicycles. I know this firsthand. I live in La Mesa. I live three streets away from the city of San Diego, and I've taken bike rides with my family. And we were going down this one road, and it was like a downhill slope in the city of San Diego, not really steep. But it was literally like I was dodging craters in the moon. And I was concerned for my safety and my 10-year-old's safety at the time. So, they're putting money into bike lanes over roads that are crumbling. And there's another thing that's going on. Because the city of San Diego is in deficit territory, People are calling the city and saying, hey, my sidewalk is crumbling. And the city of San Diego is like, oh, you fix it.
Wow.
Because there's no money to fix it. So the city is telling people to fix the public sidewalks in front of their own houses that often have homeless encampments on them. So make it make sense. We need common sense. Common sense that's not common anymore. And we desperately need to go in a different direction in San Diego County.
And again, that is a nonpartisan issue.
Come on.
Yeah, that's a nonpartisan issue.
Much everyone cares about the sidewalks in front of their house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how I talk with people. I mean, there's times when I'll go into an event and they want to know, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? Right? And then, you know, I try to go, well, let's talk about the issues. And, you know, then I will, you know, share with them my political affiliations with the Libertarian Party and the Republican Party. Sadly, some people just shut down. Mm-hmm. They can't get past the political party.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
There's people on the right, there's people on the left, and their brains right now are just wired to like toe the party line and not even see the person in front of them. So as much as possible, I've just been in the community. I'm at 7 to 10 events a week. Sometimes I'm at as many as 5 events a day on the weekends. And I'm just trying to show up, be there so people can see me in person instead of just going along with what my opponent has done, which is the name calling and mudslinging that really is unbecoming of somebody in public office. So And I did and challenge I did her challenge on that at a debate, which was interesting.
Good, good for you. We are coming up on an hour that actually flew by. Sean, do you have any last questions for Amy?
I do. So it seems like you're a grassroots candidate that is really focused on meeting the needs of the people. You don't seem to be hyper partisan. You know, I love that you have the endorsement by Bill Walton. What can people who support you do to help you, knowing that you don't have $600,000 coming from some super PAC union, labor union? You need help. What does that look like?
Well, join my team. I have 350 volunteers that are knocking on doors, making phone calls, they're texting their friends, getting out the vote. Reach out to me. Here's my website, amyforsandiego.com. That's amyforsandiego.com. And here's my email address. And yes, I'm actually somebody that returns emails. So just reach out to me through my email, amy@amyforsandiego.com. And then also I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Amy for San Diego. So I'd love to hear from anybody who's interested in getting involved and making some history.
Wait a second. Did you say
Sean stole my final question?
Okay, hold on. Well, I got another question. You said 350 volunteers.
That's right.
That's incredible. So that's a pretty big team.
Yes. So part of my backstory was, so I worked at a church for 10 years and I oversaw 10 ministries with 650 volunteers. So, you know, it's really interesting the kind of things that you learn in life and how God will use you. And so I'm really proud of how many volunteers that we have for this campaign. We don't have to pay canvassers to go knocking on doors like my opponents have had to do.
Yes. That's a great point. Many of these candidates, rather than building the trust in their community, they pay people that are desperate for money to go out and do the bidding for these candidates who don't have the tenacity to go build a relationship. So it's really impressive to hear the work that you've been doing to build that trust in your community, as well as earn that respect from those volunteers. Yeah, it's a really impressive campaign you're running.
So I'll ask since I'm in Orange County, as someone outside of the county who obviously I'm sorry, I cannot go to San Diego door knock. It's just not realistic for me. How could someone else outside of your county help?
If people want to donate, they can go to amyforsandiego.com. There's a donate button at the top. Every single dime goes to voter engagement. We'll be sending out texts. We'll be sending out mailers to people's mailboxes. So anything that fuels the fire for this campaign is welcome. Thank you so much.
Are you doing phone calls? That can people
phone calls.
Okay. I've done that before. So like for someone completely like in Northern California, not even near me. And but I didn't know if you were doing that. So, okay. That's easy for Betty. That's really easy. They like, you can do like a quick 10-minute training and just do a few phone calls a day. And, you know,
absolutely. So if you're not in the county and you want to make phone calls, just reach out to me at my email address too. In the primary, we knocked on over 15,000 doors and we also made over 5,000 phone calls. So that's something that you can do from the comfort of your home. You don't have to be in San Diego to do that.
And you can be in your pajamas. You don't have to put on any makeup on your couch. Yeah. So I just want to encourage people to do that for other candidates because it is a great way to help them volunteer, you know, 2024 is upon us.
Yes.
Okay.
That is actually the most meaningful thing that you can do. Here's my big, like, ask of everybody. Next year is a big election year. It's just going to determine everything about your local government. And that's really, if there is a candidate that you feel passionate about, get off of social media. Don't post on Facebook about the latest outrage of the day. Reach out to a local candidate that you really like, know, and trust, and get involved. It's really easy. And you know what? Most likely you're going to make friends along the way, like-minded friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought of a question really quick because I actually don't know the answer to this. The special election, you're filling in for the remainder of Fletcher's, right, for his time. So this is till 2026?
Yes, 2026. So there would be 3 years left in his term.
3 years left. Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay.
The election is November 7th.
Please tell us. November 7th. 2 weeks, 21 days.
Yeah.
Sean, what's where up? Can people find you if they want to know more about you and get involved with San Diego Freedom Fighters?
Well, I am on social media because that's where I like to hang out. At Sean Fredrickson is my handle on Instagram. Freedom Revival events as well. We'll be probably doing something exciting at some point this year, putting out a voter guide likely. Send me a message. Send me an email. I always like to engage with folks.
Spell out your name. You just have one of those, like, it could go anyway, so just spell it.
That's true. So you're either going to have to pay close attention or just get lucky on social media. So it's S-H-A-U-N Fredrickson, F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. If you spell it wrong, just keep trying. You'll find me eventually.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
And his name, just start typing that in and you're going to see him pop up.
You're going to see him pop up. Right.
That's right.
It's true. He's kind of a big deal out there. Any last thoughts from either of you?
You know, I'm really excited.
Everybody.
All right.
Go ahead.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for coming on.
It's game on, everybody. You've got to vote as if your life depends on it, because it does. You need to get engaged. You need to be involved. If you're just like kind of like sitting on the couch and you're just thinking, you know, what can you do? There's a lot that you can do. So thank you so much, Camille, for having me on. Thank you so much, Sean, for your time and your great questions. And everybody in the audience, thank you so much.
Yes, and thank you so much for both of you. Amy, thank you for running. I've never run. I can't imagine. I mean, I sincerely hope you win, but even just running, I know you like last year as well. And I know that takes a lot out of you, and you and I kind of spoke last year, you know, about just some of the things going on. And so I wish people understood more, and just like much respect to people who even decide to get in this race and run. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. Sean, thank you so much for being here to guide us through San Diego. Next week, Phil will be back to host. So the 24th, October 24th, it'll be back to our regular schedule. And if you enjoyed this podcast, if you're a San Diego resident, please go ahead and share it with someone. YouTube, Rumble, it'll be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all the things, all the places. That's the best thing you can do to support the show. It is free. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it. And follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.